Podcasting from a secret location under the mats. This is the Lessons from the Dojang Podcast, a podcast that literally has nothing to do with martial arts, but instead, we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. Kind of makes you wonder how we came up with the name, doesn't it? Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and attorney Frank Natal.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your lesson from the Dojang for your Wednesday. I am your co-host, Master Patsy Zarilla, and with me, as always, your other co-host and my dear friend, attorney Frank Natal. How you doing, Frank?
I'm wonderful, Master Patsy. Thanks for having me, as always, on Wednesday afternoon, and ready to get at it today.
Yeah, we got some serious things to talk about. You know, for the last, let's say month or so, let's make it 2 months, our timing's been really good. It's like our Wednesday pod was always dropping at just the right time whenever something, you know, something good came out. Unfortunately, this week, not so much. But by the time everybody hears this week's pod, the Mueller report's been released and everybody's dissected it to death. I would like to, I'd like to hear your thoughts about it and, you know, whatever angles you feel like taking on it. I guess the biggest one for me is, you know, you can read a lot more into this than most people can. I would assume far more than I can. What are your thoughts and what do you think this poses for our beloved president?
Well, you know, I think it's not surprising to me. I guess the biggest takeaway, you know, on the overall kind of reaction, I guess, is where I would start with this is, I haven't seen the needle move too much for people who are Trump supporters or those that are, you know, strongly anti-Trump. So those two camps of people have not been, swayed by this report in any way. You know, I had a direct conversation with somebody who's a staunch Trump supporter. The night the report came out, he called me last week and couldn't wait to talk and wanted to know what my thoughts were. And, you know, immediately he started turning his attention to the whataboutisms, the what about this, mm-hmm. what about that, about the crazy, you know, Democrat liberal agenda. And, you know, he wouldn't stay focused on the Mueller report at all with me because it was too damning. You know, there really wasn't much that he could say in the way of sugarcoating what had come out against President Trump. But the thing is, what you see is folks who are claiming, including Trump himself at times, claiming victory in that there's quote unquote no collusion, quote unquote no obstruction in this report. So that's what they've hung on to. And I think last week when we reported, and I don't know if that pod was able to make it live, make it up for anybody to listen to, but we talked about the fact that, you know, there probably wouldn't be any huge bombshells out of that report, which I would say underestimated because I do think there were some bombshells in the report. But the way the pro-Trump camp has played this following the lead of Trump is, you know, there's no obstruction, no collusion, no obstruction, no collusion. They keep repeating that same frame that they want to frame this in. And then the folks who are anti-Trump are saying, you know, this is serious. There's a serious allegation. There are serious allegations in this report that indicate that the president of the United States attempted to fire the special counsel, to get rid of the special counsel, attempted to do a variety of things to obstruct justice, attempted to sway the investigation to not be forthcoming throughout the investigation, attempted on many occasions to do those things, and that in and of itself, those are reasons to impeach the president. And, you know, of course you can argue both sides, and that's what makes it interesting. But I think it leaves us with this ongoing struggle of one side versus the other with no clear-cut answers at this point. And I know that's not exciting, or I guess, how do I put it? It's not the path that people wanted on either side, because, you know, the anti-Trumpers want a clear path to impeach him or to sully him enough that he will be completely unelectable come 2020. And the pro-Trump people, you know, they want this clear vindication of Trump, and they're pushing so hard for the media and the Democrats to apologize to Trump based upon this report. But, you know, I think most folks, and there's another Trump supporter that I spoke with, that the first time he's ever said to me these words, when I asked him about what he thought about the Mueller report, he said he's filthy, meaning Trump's filthy. And mm-hmm. that he said, but what are you going to do? An impeachment process will just be a big waste of time. So, because realistically, let's face it, and I want to get into this a little bit more, but I don't want to just usurp all the time, Master Patsy, but after I kind of went through my general summary of this, I just want to say this one last piece before we start to get into analyzing what we've said and what I've said, and then going on to the next piece, which is, he said he's filthy and, you know, there's no use in doing an impeachment because it's a waste of time, which if everything lines up without any new evidence, without any new bombshells, and unless some serious rank and file Republicans break ranks, you know, the democratically controlled Congress, the democratically controlled House of Representatives will draw up impeachment articles, vote to impeach him, and then turn it over to the Senate, which is controlled by the Republicans, who will not vote to impeach or to punish the president in any way. They could punish him by, you know, removing him from office or by censoring him, and they won't do that, at least as things stand now. Now, that could change, but in any event, that's my big takeaway from where we are right now after the Mueller report.
Yeah, you know, I have a tendency to agree with you. I think there was enough ammunition, let's say, on both sides. And I'm pretty much convinced at this point that that is a result of Barr's redactions. I look at it, you know, I try to take an honest look at everything, even whenever it doesn't suit my agenda or suit my purpose, right? And the stuff that is in here, in this thing, to me, I came away with feeling that Donald Trump is damn lucky he holds the office he does. Because if this was anybody else, his ass would be in jail by now. That was my take on it. I agree with your one friend who said that impeachment is a waste of time. I 100% completely agree with that. I also agree with his analysis that he's filthy because, well, he is, but that didn't stop his supporters. Right there, he's filthy, he's crooked, he's corrupt, he's misogynistic, he's sexist, he's racist, he's all that, and then it didn't stop them from voting for him. So he's in with these guys. And I think he made the famous remark that he could shoot somebody in the middle of,
Times Square, Fifth Avenue.
Times Square, yeah, wherever it was. And he could get away with it. And you know what? He's absolutely right. He could. There is nothing that his supporters will not accept from him. Literally nothing. And that's just how it is. And you know, just to put that in perspective, every president has that rabid group of supporters. They all do, right? Obama did, Bush did, Clinton did, they all did. Just go down the line. You're always gonna have that 20 or 30%. That thinks you can walk on water and you can do no wrong. And that's fine. You know, when you see it over the course of time, it makes sense. And that's really the only norm that we see coming out of this presidency. It boggles the mind how somebody could be this absolutely ridiculously ugly. And I don't mean that in a physical term. I just mean his persona, everything he represents, be this totally ugly and have that same percentage. That's what boggles the mind to me.
Yep.
But he your friend was spot on. The Democrats have every reason in the world and every opportunity and every right, and they have, it's not a shot in the dark. It's not like he's getting a blowjob in the Oval Office, right? They have firm ground to begin impeachment proceedings. They absolutely do. And he's absolutely right whenever he said it'll go to the Senate and die. I guess what I want to ask you, is it a good idea to begin these proceedings, do you think? Simply because then there are so many things that are going to be exposed and so many things that are going to come out of the shadows and be readily available for everybody to see? Or do you think that it's something like Nancy Pelosi wants to do? Because if you kind of read between the lines, she's not looking for impeachment proceedings, or she, but in essence, she's doing the same thing. She's just not calling it impeachment proceedings, right? They're still going to have the testimonies. They're still going to call witnesses. They're still going to have go through the motions, maybe not as formal or as intense as an impeachment proceeding would be, but you're still going to get damn near that same information. You're just not going to call it an impeachment proceeding. And I'm curious as to your thoughts on that. Which way would you rather see this thing go, and why would you rather see it go that way, whichever way that would be?
Master Patsy, I intentionally took a very neutral stance when I broke down my thoughts originally on the Mueller report, and I intentionally really focused on trying to give both sides of that argument, and that's kind of the dampen the flue of the flames that are really smoldering here, and I think that. Whether you go with an impeachment proceeding or you go with continued investigations, that flame is still burning. And the thing that's interesting about it is it's now got a lot more wood to throw on the fire. And what I mean by that is the obvious parallel is there's people out there now that remember we spoke last week and I said that there were people that were starting to become bored with it. They were starting to become distant and that the media, the Trump-friendly media, was starting to try to make that distance wider. They were saying things like, the American public's more focused on the table talk issues. They don't want to hear about Mueller anymore. They don't want to hear about investigations anymore. They want to hear about their Medicare, their Medicaid. They want to hear about their Social Security. They want to hear about the economy. They want to hear about jobs. They want to hear about health care. Which, I argued at the time, we can do both things. We're a big enough country. We have enough resources that we can focus on all those things. It's not a problem. But what has happened since the Mueller report came out is you see that the reality now has hit home with people, and now that the woodshed is not barren anymore, people's interest is there to put those logs on the fire and say, "Yeah, I want to know more. I want to know more," because there's some unanswered questions, and there's enough questions that were answered in a way that raise enough suspicion about President Trump that makes me want to know more. It makes me want to say he has to be questioned directly by Congress. So, and we need to ask Mueller some questions, and we need to ask his investigators some questions, and we need to ask the people who are close to Trump some questions. So I think it's the time. Yes, it's the time. The time is now. The fire is still smoldering. Let's not let it go out. There's not, now is absolutely the time to do it. And it doesn't have to be an impeachment, articles of impeachment right now, but the investigations need to go on, and we need to keep that going. Because the people in our country are starting to become more energized by it. And this is so the first analysis I gave was kind of that blank neutral stance. The things that can change are what we're talking about now. And what can change is with new material evidence that may already be in existence, Master Patsy, that might be redacted. There might be information that's in that report that's information that could be very damning to the president or other people close to him. Or there may be information in there that leads to other questions that should be asked that will lead to more new information that's very damaging to the president. So with that new information that will surely become available in public after congressional hearings, then that could even change what the Republicans would do if an impeachment proceeding was started. The Republicans in Senate might find supporting President Trump to be an untenable position. And that's where this gets very dangerous for Trump and his crew. Because the longer the investigation goes on, and this isn't the Benghazi, this isn't the email investigation, there's something here. There's something here which has been proven already by the fact that there's, you know, 13 indictments, there's so many indictments and so many guilty pleas and people in jail that they came out of this situation. And then you've got Trump himself, who has already been shown to have tried to obstruct. He tried to obstruct justice. So, you know, not to mention what's going on with his finances, what's going on with his taxes, what's going on with all this stuff. When that information becomes available, it's going to be very damning. And then it may become untenable for the Republicans in Congress in some jurisdictions to stand by the president.
Yeah, you know, I kind of follow the idea of, well, let me throw this one at you because this might be the better way to do this. I think, you know, you listen to a lot of people on the left and they're saying we have to start impeachment proceedings right away. Should have started them yesterday, right? And I'm wondering if this idea of impeachment proceedings or, you know, is in Trump's best interest if it happens now. And here, just hear me out for a second. From day one, from the moment he announced that he was running for president, he has always assumed the position of being the victim. He has always been the victim president. No matter what it was, no matter who was doing what, he's the victim. The media is out to get him. The Democrats are out to get him. Everybody's out to get him. And his you know, his followers just fall in line. Yeah, they're always out to get me. And you know, the people who do that are the same people who don't understand what it means to have the privilege that they have. They always look at anybody trying to even the playing field as trying to take something away from them where they're being victimized. And Trump plays that up. But he's done that from day one. So he has a history of yelling that I'm the victim, woe is me. Whenever you're hitting these impeachment proceedings, he's going to play that. I mean, that's right in his wheelhouse. And I'm wondering if doing it this early doesn't actually give him the upper hand in 2020, because then he can say, look at what they did to me, or look at what they're doing to me. Now, there's going to be an end to this, or a perceived end to it, even if there really isn't, because it happened so long. And then the American people is going to get tired of hearing about this all the time, and they're going to end up turning it off. Just in their minds, they're going to end up turning it off. Whereas this way, where you're either going to start these impeachment hearings much later, much closer to 2020, or you're just going to drag these investigations out, where every day it's something new against them. You know, then every so often something hard, you know, hits home really hard. I'm wondering if doing going the impeachment route at a later date, if at all, is the better way to do it. And I'm starting to think that maybe it is. I'm starting to think that why allow this guy? Why give him the black and white, I'm a victim, whenever, every time he wakes, he's a victim of waking up in the morning, you know? why give him something formal to be a victim of? Why not just continue these things forever and ever and ever and just wear him out and have him continuously fight on a bunch of fronts as opposed to one front, which is the impeachment thing?
I agree with you in that analysis. And I'll tell you why. I think the investigations need to continue, and that's what I articulated. And I think that we need to, we meaning the United States, citizenry, as represented by our Congress, need to investigate the wrongdoing or the alleged wrongdoing by his administration. That's what they're there to do, and that's what they need to tout as they do it. They need to be a public relations machine as well. They need to speak on the fact that their job, their sworn duty, is not just to write laws. It is to be a balance of power, to be a check on somebody trying to become an authoritarian, to somebody who's using corrupt means and methods to fleece the American public. That is their job. It is one of their job responsibilities, and they need to explain that to the American public. And I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I do want to tell you that I was just with some very smart people last weekend. And I won't even say, where I was, but I'll just say that these folks were incredibly smart. One person is an engineer, and the lack of knowledge about civics was astounding. And it's not, I don't blame them. I just blame the lack of emphasis on civics teaching in our country, for the lack of knowledge. But, this individual was talking to me about, well, don't you need a conviction to have an impeachment? And I think that, the misunderstanding is you need a conviction to have a punishment, but you don't need a conviction to have an impeachment. You start impeachment with articles of impeachment by a vote. So, the fact that we're talking about what Congress's job is not rudimentary. It's not basic, because it may be basic to some, but it needs to be reminded to folks. There's a lot of people that don't know that that's their job. They just think they're there to just write laws, to pass laws, to vote on things. That's not their only job. And they need to tell the American public that. And they need to start and continue investigations and be very aggressive with the investigations, because as real things come out, there are still a lot of real people who are independent, not Trump supporters, not completely, anti-Trump, but they're just reasonable people who say, look, I want my job. I want my health care. I want my family to be safe at night when we go to sleep in our hometown. So whatever keeps our country humming along, I'm okay with. But if those people get the chance to see real hard facts that Donald Trump is fleecing America by, violating the Emoluments Clause, and that's explained to them what that really means, they're going to get angry, because nobody wants to have their money stolen from them. Nobody wants to have somebody take advantage of them. And once they see that this person is taking advantage of them and the rest of the American public, those regular everyday folks are going to get angry. And Trump can say he's the victim all he wants, but when people get angry, look, we give a lot of people a lot of chances in this country. That's what we're known for. But once you burn people and you lie to them, then they're not so forgiving. So I think that needs to continue. And as far as the impeachment process goes, I do agree with you, Master Patsy. The timing is not exactly right. And I think it will be held up enough because Nancy Pelosi and others within the Democratic Party that are in the House of Representatives will slow that down enough that it won't start, too soon. I don't think it'll start too soon. They can't stop an individual representative from drafting articles of impeachment. But what they can do is not bring it to a vote, or if they bring it to a vote, they can vote it down for this time period. And I think that's what will happen. There's enough process to delay that at this time. And I think you're absolutely right in that regard, because you don't want to take your big shot without enough evidence. And I think we're in a stage right now where, people were so anxious and so ready for things to happen a year and a half ago. A year ago, like, why is it taking so long for the Mueller report to come out? Why is it taking so long? We need you, Bob Mueller, come through. And now that it's out, and now that there's a lot of answered questions, but some of those questions that were answered lead to other questions that we need to have answered. Investigations, people in America will not be like, hey, don't continue with investigations now. We're tired of investigations. No, they're the exact opposite. They're saying, wow, this all came out. Hey, let's ask some more questions, you know?
Yeah, I found it interesting. And every day, I still continue to find it interesting that we're having this conversation based on a redacted report that Trump's handpicked guy, the guy that auditioned for the job, has redacted. So this is off of his hand, and we're still having this conversation. So that report's got to be that's got to be overwhelming, right? On a side note, just a quick yes or no, Frank, before I continue. Do you think that the American public will ever see the full unredacted Mueller report?
No, but we'll see a lot more than what we've seen so far.
I think that's spot on. I agree with you. I don't think we will ever see the full unredacted report. Maybe, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, whenever you and I are playing with our grandkids. But I don't think for any time in the near, in a foreseeable future. The second question, do you think Congress will ever see the unredacted report?
Yes.
After a fight?
Yes. Yes, after a fight or after a leak.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think, and I've said it over and over again, I think Pelosi's handling this the correct way. You know, Nana's going to kill you by a thousand cuts. She's not going to take a shot at something and blow her only leverage. Right? She's not going to do it. She's going to hit you here, a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here. And then finally, you know, whenever all is said and done, she's going to come out and say, here's what we got, here's what we know, and here you go. And I think as this thing plays on and all of this garbage continues to come out, I think you're going to see people start to change their tune. Even, I don't want to say, I'm not even talking about his supporters, because let's just ignore them, because they're a lost cause. Okay, you're never going, if this person's, the fact that this person is alive and breathing is, and they still support this guy, nothing you can possibly do is ever going to change their mind. So let's just ignore these 3 out of 10. Okay?
Right.
But if you're looking at responsible, let's say honest Republicans, Reagan Republicans, Bush Republicans, you know, whatever the case may be, I think as this thing goes on, I don't think they're going to be so willing to plant their feet and decide that I don't care what it is, I'm going to vote for this guy. I think you're going to get enough between them and the independents to swing this thing and get him voted out. And I've said from day one, nothing is going to happen until the election. He's going to be there until 2020. That's a guarantee. I've said that from day one. I will bet anybody obscene amounts of money. He's going to be in that office until 2020. I'm not so sure he's going to be there after 2020, but he's going to be there until his first term is over. That's almost a guarantee. No one's going to tell me different. Pelosi's gonna drag his name through the mud, and Elijah Cummings is gonna drag his name through the mud, and Jerry Nadler is gonna drag his name through the mud so much that this guy is just gonna be fighting. Don't forget, now we have 24-ish Democrats running for president on top of that. That's too many fronts for him to fight. He won't be able to handle it. I'm sorry, he won't. And I understand the emotional response to wanting to throw this impeachment thing at him and get him out. You know, believe me, I really understand the emotional tie to this. But I think it's in the Democrats' best interest. And I'll go even further. I think it's in the country's best interest to play that long game that Pelosi's playing and say, you know what? We're going to get them, but it's going to take us a year and a half to do it. This cancer, we weren't infected with this cancer overnight. We can't get rid of it overnight. It's going to take a while to build our immunity system back up and get this thing out of our system.
I agree with what almost everything you said. The only part that I would differ just a little bit with you on is this. I think that after the investigations take place, that they need to continue on with. They need to get these tax returns. They need to subpoena Bob Mueller or, you know, have him come by invite, which they've already invited him to come to Congress. They need to ask the questions and they need to see if they can get the unredacted report. And they need to follow up on all those things without an impeachment proceeding going on. But I think that once they get through that process, and it could be, you know, by late fall this year, or it could be by winter this year that they get through most of that process, I think that an impeachment still could help us. And by impeachment, I mean just what I've said, that articles will be drafted, a vote will be taken in the House to start impeachment proceedings. And I still think that there'll be enough Republicans that are going to toe the party line or the Trump protectors that they may stave off any punishment against him, no matter what comes out. But we'll see. We'll see, because there's still a lot to go. There's still a lot of information to go. So for that reason, I'm not sure that, you know, I agree that we shouldn't do an impeachment, because we don't know everything that's going to come out. And there could be some things that come out that make even the staunchest, you know, Republicans say, I can't stand behind the president. I can't, because it's going to kill my electability later. And on the other hand, this is the second part of what I was going to argue, just a little bit different from what you said. Let's say you take this matter to the people in 2020 without an impeachment proceeding. Okay. The argument goes like this from Trump's standpoint. I was a victim for 2.5 years of my, for 2.5 years of my first term. And look at all the things I got done. I was a victim of this stupid witch hunt. They never even had enough evidence to try to impeach me. They never even tried to impeach me. But they put me through all this crap, and look what everything I accomplished. Give me a second term and watch what I do for the American public. Okay? So what I think we need to do is we still need to take the case to the American people, but it would be great if you did that with more information through these investigations. An impeachment proceeding that if they want to do this on political lines, and then they say at the end of the day, if there's this great overwhelming evidence against Trump, but the Republicans still vote not to censure him or not to remove him from office, and then the election comes, the American public will be faced with this scenario. There was all this overwhelming evidence against him. They voted to impeach him, but they just did politically. The Republicans politically protected him. Now we're not going to stand for that. We're removing him from office.
Yeah, I think that analogy is spot on. I think that's the way that we're going, and we really didn't disagree all that much. Let me ask you this, because it came out today, and I know I'm kind of jumping a little bit, but it should be in this conversation. Everything we've talked about up to this point has basically taken place over the last week, okay? Today, this, you know, as I've described them many, many times on our YouTube channel, as, you know, the 13-year-old girl with her first cell phone got onto Twitter. And basically what he said, and I'm summarizing, is he thinks the Supreme Court can save him from impeachment. He thinks that he can go to the Supreme Court and fight being these impeachment papers, these impeachment proceedings, that he can go to the Supreme Court and he can fight having the congressional subpoenas for folks to testify, including McGahn. And I said that intentionally, Frank, because I you know, you're the expert in this. At least between you and me, we are. You are. But here's my question. It doesn't appear to me, and again, you know, I'm an engineer slash martial artist. I have no legal training in anything at all. But if I read things right, number one, the Supreme Court has nothing to do with impeachment proceedings. They cannot stop it. They cannot even weigh in on it. Technically, they can't even, they basically have to rule that they will not hear the case. That's what I'm taking from it. And number two, I get the feeling he thinks that because of the Kavanaugh thing and everything else, that he has a stacked deck in his favor, where it doesn't matter what it is, he's going to take everything to the Supreme Court, and his rigged Supreme Court, in his mind, his rigged Supreme Court is always going to come back and do things in his favor. That's the first two, and then I'll throw number three at you once you address these two questions.
Well, let me start with the second part first, because it's a little bit easier to kind of just riff on, and then I'll get into the first question after that. But I think that, you know, his belief that he's stacked the court in his favor is based on, obviously, he was able to appoint two of the judges. There's a philosophical bent on the bench right now that is leaning more towards the Republican agenda, which is clear in the way that the court votes, the way the votes come out. You know, so there's that he bases his opinion on, those two things. And then, you know, he may feel that based upon speaking with his counsel, whoever that may be these days, whether it's Rudy Giuliani or other folks in the White House that are still there that are counseling him on legal matters, that he can gum up the works through different processes, not necessarily through directly the impeachment trial, but through the different processes, like you said, you mentioned about the subpoenas and squashing the subpoenas and squashing those. That could be done through the Supreme Court. And if he feels confident that he can stop the subpoenas for his tax returns, stop the subpoenas to get witnesses to come in, you know, it's enough to start to kind of put seeds of doubt in people's heads. And this is one of those things that autocrats do. You know, whether or not he's got the juice, so to speak, on the Supreme Court to do that, he's sending a signal. And this is the part that's dangerous. He's sending a signal to the world, to the country, and maybe even to the legal people. Don't mess with me because I can get around this. Don't mess with me because I can get around with this. And you know, it's almost like what Barr did that one day when he was testifying in front of Congress and said, you know, we think there was spying that went on. He just dropped that out of nowhere. And these are little signals and subtle clues that this administration is trying to tell everybody, we're bigger, we're above everything. We'll make it work out the way we want it to work out. So, you know, that's a tricky and dangerous thing. And it's something that's slippery to the point where you can't pin it on him, but the message is there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about whether or not, you know, they would weigh in on an impeachment, like we talked about, you know, a lot at the beginning of this podcast, it's the House that votes to draft articles of impeachment. They draft the articles and then they vote on them to start the impeachment process. And then the Senate holds essentially the trial to determine, and they have a two-thirds majority must vote to decide whether the official, which in this case would be the president, would be guilty or not guilty. So that's the process. So I guess that answers the first question. The second question was, you know, the one that was a little bit more fun to talk about, because it's fun and scary at the same time, because I think it's part of you know, it's part of this designed agenda that they have, that is to say to everybody out there, we control everything. So don't keep coming after us, because we'll make you pay.
I want to ask you, and this is question number three, of this thing. Getting back to the legal issue, and really, I can't think of anybody I would rather have answer this question. Trump is at least it appears that he is going to try to invoke executive privilege when it comes to McGahn testifying in front of Congress. He waived that privilege for McGahn to testify, or for Mueller to question him. I shouldn't say testify. That's not accurate. Because he didn't claim executive privilege with McGahn going and talking to Mueller, does that change this idea that he can now try to use executive privilege to get McGahn to not testify in front of Congress?
That's a great question, Master Paz. That's an excellent question. And, you know, there are a variety of privileges in the legal world. You know, there's a doctor-patient privilege. There's an attorney-client privilege. There's privileged information, work product information that could be privileged. So oftentimes when a privileged communication is disclosed voluntarily, the privilege is deemed then waived. So your question is, once he allowed his attorney, his counsel from the White House, to go speak with Robert Mueller and answer the questions that Robert Mueller had, did he then waive that attorney-client privilege?
Yes. That's question number three. I have a number four after that, but go ahead.
My argument would be, and I have to argue that, I have to caveat this a little bit and say that I don't have any documentation in terms of what, and I haven't reviewed any documentation if it's available, in terms of what the president, you know, or his legal team may have said to Mueller, I should say, when they allowed McGahn to testify. If they had, you know, put a stipulation in place to some effect, to say that they are not waiving attorney-client privilege, and that this is only to be used for this singular purpose, I would say even that would be problematic to try to reassert the privilege. And I would say that I think the privilege is gone. I think the privilege is gone for two reasons. One, he allowed him to go testify to a third party. Once a third party hears that, as to what he's heard, that part of the privilege is gone. You could still assert the privilege as to other meetings and other communications, and say, well, wait, this was a separate matter, a separate time frame. I was talking to him about something totally different, and that was not disclosed to the third party. So I'm reasserting the privilege as to that material. But this material about whether he instructed him to call Rosenstein and all the things that went on around that, I don't think he can reassert the privilege around that. I think it's waived because he allowed him to go testify to a third party about it. Not testify, but to talk to a third party about it. So now that a third party has been told that information voluntarily with the permission of the president, it's no longer privileged information. It's not privileged anymore.
You seem to be echoing something that a lot of other attorneys are saying. Now, that being said, I should point out that the others that are saying that are definitely people that are, you know, on the liberal side, on the Democratic side. So there's going to be a bias there. Here's my other question for you, and I haven't heard anybody ask this question yet. If I'm not mistaken, and if I am mistaken, then this question that I'm giving to you is going to be moot. It's not going to hold any water. But was McGahn at the time, whenever, you know, he he met with Mueller and had how many hours of interviewing with him. Was he the was he Trump's attorney or was he the president's attorney? And I want to say he was the presidential attorney. He was the office's attorney, not the individual's attorney, if I'm correct.
I think you're correct on that, and I think it's a fine line distinction, but it is a distinction that could have some
Right,
impact.
you understand where I'm going with this, what I'm going to ask you, right? It's one thing whenever you are Donald Trump's attorney. It's another thing when you are the office of the president's attorney. The difference, is it really like razor thin, or is there an actual distinct difference between what McGahn can say as the office of the president's attorney and what he can say as Donald Trump's attorney?
Well, let's put it this way. I think there can be distinctions that are not razor thin, but I think in this practical aspect of this particular case and what we're talking about, I think the distinction is nearly non-existent, and I'm going to tell you why in a very brief summary. I'm not going to go into a long-winded explanation. When Donald Trump said or did anything in regards to directing Donald McGahn or Attorney McGahn, to do something, he was doing it as the president of the United States. Therefore, when McGahn was
No, is
listen,
that regardless of his motivation?
yes,
okay. Okay. I just want to make
yeah,
that distinction
because,
so people hear it, right?
yeah,
So it doesn't
because,
matter what his motivation was. It is his status at the time.
right,
Okay.
because, yes, because let's say this, Donald Trump, the individual, could be writing a will or wanting to transact selling a piece of property or something like that as the individual citizen. And that in that case, an attorney who sat down with Donald Trump and said, "Yeah, let's write this will for you," and then Donald Trump disclosed to that attorney something about the Mueller investigation. Or about wanting to remove Mueller from the special counsel position, that would be his private attorney, and his motivation of wanting to remove Mueller from the investigation, the motive would not matter. His private attorney, he would still have attorney-client privilege with him. On the other hand, because McGahn was acting as the attorney for the office of the president, and the interactions between Donald Trump and McGahn were dealing with presidential matters always, or at least throughout this process. That distinction really has no, it doesn't change things because he's always acting as his counsel as the president and for the office of president. And the president's actions and what his motivations were are not and have no bearing. So it's just what happened between the two of them was directed towards presidential matters.
So that puts McGahn in really kind of a tough situation, if you think about it, because on one hand he has to be respectful to the office, and at the same time he shoulders a hell of a responsibility with everything else. That's a hard thing to put somebody in a position of, especially with somebody with Donald Trump's character, I would think.
Well, did you read the one part that was in the Mueller report about Don McGahn that was, I think, pretty telling? This had to come directly from Don McGahn to the Mueller team when he was being interviewed. There was an excerpt within that section that talked about the president's orders to Don McGahn to repeatedly ask him to call Rosenstein to have Mueller removed. And McGahn was so conflicted with this that he kept coming back to the idea that he wanted to be thought of as the Supreme Court Justice Robert Bork or the Justice Robert Bork, who never was Supreme Court justice, but the Justice Robert Bork, as opposed to the Sunday Night Massacre Robert Bork. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't want to have his name associated with some historical incident that is a red mark on his name for our country. He wants to be, you know, he doesn't want to have a deficit be in the red for our country. He wants to be in the black. And mm-hmm. that was a quote, a direct quote from McGahn that made it into the Mueller report.
Go on. So this idea that he, as the office of the president's counsel, I still think he kind of has to walk a fine line between the person and the office. And I think that that's a heavy burden, I think, for a lot of people to carry. At least I would think so.
Absolutely. And that's why he wanted to resign, because in reality, you can talk fine lines about the distinction between I'm the president's counsel or I'm the White House, you know, the White House counsel, the office of the president counsel. But in reality, you're dealing with an individual, a human being, and in this case, mm-hmm. a very persuasive, very heavy-handed individual who would call him repeatedly and say, have you done what I asked you to do yet? You know, have you done that thing yet? And what question, what answer is he going to give him? He didn't want to call him. He didn't want to call Rosenstein. So he didn't want to continue to lie to him and say, yeah, I called him. He wasn't going to make up a lie because he knew he was going to be asked. What was he going to say? So the reality is he was faced with some very tough decisions, as you've pointed out, and you're very, very astute on that. And that's some of the stuff that's really, you know, I don't know that it gets a lot of play. Quite frankly, after day one or day two, Master Patsy, I stopped watching the news about this kind of stuff because I wanted to form my own opinions after reading it mm-hmm. and rereading stuff and certain excerpts from this, because, I don't know what they're saying about this, but to me, that's one of those things that if you look at an individual who was right there next to the president and saying, I was so conflicted that I thought about resigning and had to be talked out of resigning numerous times by people, you know, that were close to the president also, but I didn't want to execute this order because I knew it was wrong.
Well, you're looking at it, and that says a whole lot about the character of Don McGahn. And sometimes I think maybe he gets a bit of a bad rap because of who he's associated with. But it seems to me that he at least made the attempt. And I'm going to be like as bottom line as I can get. He at least made the attempt to be the office's president counsel over the individual's counsel. It at least appears to me that he really gave it a hell of a shot. And I don't think that most people would be able to keep that separate like that and stay focused on my role is for the office of the president, not to Donald Trump. And I think that says a lot about his character.
I agree. And I think, there are people who are very disciplined and take that role very seriously. And they act upon their duties as they should, you know, but kudos to him for doing that. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Do you think that ultimately, and I know it's going to drag out, and you know, I'm not looking for a timetable, but do you think that ultimately McGahn is going to testify or is going to be questioned by Congress? Do you think there's really any way to stop him?
I think he'll testify, and I think they'll try to stop him, but I think that I think he'll testify. I don't think they'll be able to stop him.
Yeah, I it seems to be the consensus opinion of most folks who are educated in law, in other words, you know, attorneys, that yeah, he's going to testify. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of it's not a matter of when, it's a matter of, well, you know what I mean. It's going to be drug out, but he's going to at least be given the, let's say the opportunity to testify. How's that sound? I always tell my students, I always want to give you the opportunity to fail. Right. And some people look at that as a negative thing. And I say, no, I look at it as a positive thing, because if I don't give you the opportunity to fail, you never know what you can achieve.
That's absolutely right.
So absolutely I, right. I, 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 Go on. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say I think there's a real deep philosophical question I wanted to pose to you, and I think it would be interesting for us to get into this maybe deeper in a future podcast. But let's just pose the question right now, and maybe if you have a few quick thoughts on it, let me know what you think. But you know, Barr was very clear about, he kept saying over and over again, you know, it's basically my discretion to release this report. I didn't have to do this. He was like, putting it in everybody's face that I'm doing you all a favor by just giving you this report. Whether I mm-hmm. give it to you redacted, I'm giving you a huge bone here by throwing this report at you. Not making anybody force anything, and I'm just giving it to you. And, you know, now juxtapose that with the way he clearly spun and did it in a way that was, quite honestly, he threw a big smoke screen up. Okay. Very honestly, mm-hmm. he didn't give a truthful account of what that report held. When he, for 4 weeks, he spun the report in a way that was, I would say, dishonest. Okay. He put a spin on it that was a big smoke screen. So knowing that he did that, and he's a smart man. Okay. Knowing mm-hmm. that he did spin this report in a way that was not accurate and it was probably dishonest, in my opinion. Then he voluntarily releases enough of the report for everybody who wants to read it to see that he spun this report that way. Why? This is the philosophical question.
Yeah. You know what? I'll be honest with you, Frank. I've been wondering that same thing. I really have, just like in the back of my mind, I've been thinking, you know, this guy has all the power in the world when it comes to this report, right? No one has more power than he does. He has influences, but at the end of the day, it's all on his shoulders. And you sit there and you read this report, the redacted report. We've been going on and on and on, you know. You and I and the people that we associate with, even the common people that we associate with, the MSNBCs and the CNNs and even the Foxes and the Drudge Reports and all of these folks have been going on and on and on and on for how long now, going over a redacted report. This redaction, I would have to assume that this is the best he could do. Right. I would have to make that assumption because no one at our level, at your level, at my level, would do things half-assed. So I would assume at a federal level where Barr is, the idea of doing something half-assed doesn't even come into play. Because don't forget, we said earlier, this guy auditioned for this job. Right. So whatever he does is going to be with Trump's blessing. And this is the best he could do. And we're already looking at this as enough to sit there and say, and you listen to every Democratic presidential nominee or not nominee, but anybody who's running on the Democratic side. Almost all of them are saying the same thing. You know, it's time to start impeachment proceedings. And the only person who's really stopping this is Pelosi. This is the best that he could do with this report. So you can look at it as, wow, what has been redacted has to be really fucking damaging. Or you could look at it from another point of view and just because I'm saying this doesn't necessarily mean I agree with it, that he's kind of given enough for people to go after Trump, but at the same time held enough back to say, hey, look, I did the best I could. It's that bad. You know, you know what I'm saying? I don't know which way that how this thing flies, but the idea that it's a half-assed effort. Maybe my head's in the clouds, but I would think that somebody who got Reagan off the hook with Iran-Contra kind of knows what he's doing. You know what I mean? And this is the best he could do? That says a whole lot about what's in that report. And whenever Mueller finally sits down in front of Congress. I can't, and I'll be honest with you, and I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, and I don't mean to, but I'm just starting to picture this and imagine this. Can you imagine what the interaction between him and Jim Jordan is going to be like? Because this idiot that Jim Jordan is doesn't he better call off sick that day, okay? Because Mueller will eat him alive. I'm of the opinion that, look, this is the best this guy could do. And if he'd have done any further, if he'd have gone any further than what he did here, he was putting his own neck in the noose that was meant for Trump. How's that sound?
It sounds about right to me. And I think that, you know, even beyond the Democratic people, the Democrats, big D, not little D, but the Democrat people who have spoken on this, let's talk about some of the Republicans. Susan Collins, you know, has spoken out and has said some things that are very unflattering to Trump about reading the report, you know, and how it made her think twice and how it made her feel about Trump after reading the report. Mitt Romney said he was sickened after reading the report. So, you know, you've got Republicans who are also saying this. And then, you know, I don't put a lot of stock in ex-Republican Congress people who are on Twitter actively and have radio shows. But, you know, there is a guy that I follow just to see what he's saying, that his reactions, because sometimes I just want to see what the other side says. But former congressman from Illinois, Joe, I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. But anyway, he has been pounding the drum about Trump being guilty of obstruction and saying that even Jim Jordan, who he was a former colleague and friend with, needs to wake up and see this for what it is. So, you know, the report itself has clearly indicated differences from what the smokescreen was for those 4 weeks. So with that said, my first philosophical guess as to why Barr did what he did, in addition to what you've said, because I agree with everything you said, Master Patsy, on your first swipe at that, I think that there's every indication that Mueller and Barr are professional friends, that they know of each other, respect each other, that I think Mueller pulled Barr aside and said, look, you've had your fun for 4 weeks. You could have your fun for another 6 months if you want to, but someday, some way, somehow, we all know that the truth is going to out eventually. So, you know, do you want to let it out now, or do you want to even look worse and have your neck in that noose, like you said? So I think that he begrudgingly let it out under some, I wouldn't call it duress, but I would call it that come to Jesus moment that was probably brought to him at some point by Mueller. Test. 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 Test one, test two. End of podcast. Okay, I can't interact with you at this time, Master Patsy. I'm sorry, I'm having a little technical difficulty, but since you can hear me, I'm going to just say I have had a great time on this podcast. I look forward to us talking again next Wednesday and maybe picking back up again with the philosophical question that we left with. I'm going to let you finish up and wrap up, and thank you so much for having me join you.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.